This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 4th of May, 2023, the day after an FOMC meeting, which actually delivered as little as possible. That was the expectation going into it. If we look at the monetary policy statement, they downshift on the forward guidance, of course, not talking about the that there would definitely be further tightening, but also not pre-committing to a pause here and deferring to incoming data. That was really no big surprise. And in the press conference, Powell studiously avoiding any hints at that they're pre-committing to anything at all. And I think largely doing a good job. And the market was very, very quiet. There were some attempts at some takeaways, yields back and forth. John Authors, by the way, go over to Bloomberg, a very long column slicing and dicing this meeting, maybe a bit excessively, but of course, he's always worth listening to. And he tried to identify one area about half of an hour in where there was a question about, do you think Mr. Powell or Chair Powell, that these cuts that are priced in are fair? And he answers along the lines of, no, he doesn't think that those cuts are fair. But, quote, others might have different opinions. But I think it just really goes to show that the Fed has no idea what's going to happen with the economy and will react to incoming data, as its guidance says. But therefore, or why therefore, if you look at the charts, you would think that something big happened to this FOMC. And I don't think it was the FOMC itself, because it was the PacWest announcement. So when one of these more troubled regional U.S. banks announcing that it is reviewing its strategic options, quote unquote, and including selling itself. And this seemed to spook the market. It certainly spooked PacWest's equity price. And you can see the regional bank index in a few slides here, or actually there on slide three on the right there. And yields plunged considerably, 15 basis points for the 2-year. That was not the FOMC's doing. That was not Powell's doing. That is this regional bank situation. And really, if you look at the forward curve, 75 basis points of cuts from the current level priced in through the December meeting. How do we get there from here? It's not going to be the economy. It is going to be if something more systemic begins to develop from this regional bank situation. So we need to have these regional banks on our radar. If you look across the economy, the numbers not coming in that suggest we're rolling into difficulties here. It is about the financial situation on the banking side. Just for example, yesterday's ADP, not a good predictor of the NFPs, admittedly, but still 296K, the strongest in quite some time versus half of that expected and half of that the prior month. Clearly, this job market is still extremely tight, for example. So 2-year yields plunging there, and we have these cuts priced in. And the market not taking that as a good sign. So we also saw the broader equity market rolling over, Peter, as we show there on slide two, with the S&P dipping towards that local support there. But we're still in the range here, arguably. We need to take out this, let's call it 4,100 area, even 4,000, I think, before the technicals are starting to really roll over.
Yeah. Was that an introduction?
That was an attempt to throw it over to you, but you're not receiving it well. But go ahead and take it up anyway.
Well, yeah, so we're seeing a bounce back in the S&P 500 futures this morning. And I agree with you, John. I mean, it is going to be a crisis on some sorts and coming from this banking turmoil that we're seeing in the U.S. We'll get back to that in a few seconds. I have some thoughts as well, because I think one of the things that are confusing this time around is the fact that we have a high structural inflation. That's not something we're used to. We used to, in the past 3 decades, that whenever we got a recession, it was a recession during a low inflationary environment. So the obvious immediate response always was to cut interest rates. But it gets much more difficult when you have a recession in real economic activity, but you have inflation running at 5-6%. It's not as easy to just cut interest rates, because if you do it, that easing of financial conditions might go straight back into inflation, and then you create a further feedback loops and structural inflation problems. So I think this understanding of the difference between the real and the nominal economy is very important to get right. Just some quick notes for perspective in the U.S. economy. So we have a 7% nominal GDP growth rate. Wages right now, 6.5% on the median, or 6.4%, bounce back in the previous data point. We have jobs, which are getting 7.5% in the U.S. So a lot of the reason inflation will be able to be absorbed by the consumers in the U.S. because of the rate increases. So I think that those are some of the risks that the Fed is looking at. So I totally agree. It has to be some crisis. Cannot be the economy that will trigger 75 basis points of cuts. If we move to the banking crisis in a different perspective, I've put that in on slide four. I was actually quite shocked when I saw this chart. I hope if you put up the pull up the slide deck, you'll see this. So we have been used to since 2010, basically when the euro area crisis started, back with Greece getting into trouble. We've been used to around a decade with the narrative going like this: U.S. growth better than European growth. The U.S. banks have a more healthy balance sheet. The policy from the Fed is better than the ECB because the ECB went into negative yields at one point. And all that led to one big outperformance by U.S. banks. As you can see from the bottom there on relative basis, these are total return numbers, by the way. So from 2010 to mid-2021, massive, massive outperformance from U.S. banks. And what are we seeing right now? U.S. banks have underperformed European banks by 41% in little less than 2 years. I think it's quite dramatic, John. And we'll talk a little bit about it in the stocks to watch about what's happening in Europe. And I promise on this podcast, and I'll do a bigger piece as well for our clients, because something is going on this whole narrative that the U.S. is always stronger and they're leading every cycle. That doesn't seem to be the case this time around. And I'll have to dig more into that. But I think we should move on with the show.
Yeah. And then I want to look at how the Fed was reacted to across markets. Let's start with foreign exchange. The dollar was weaker, but really weaker only versus the euro, which is sort of the euro dollar tickling the highs of the range. But the big story here is the big surge in the yen. That's, of course, being led by yields. But it really is a whipsaw, because let's recall we just had this Bank of Japan meeting last week in which there was a disappointment in the yen weakening factor of the Bank of Japan taking its sweet time to do a policy review of 1 to 1.5 years. And that saw a sharply weaker yen. But look at this, just a wonderful technical situation here on the dollar yen chart, slide five. It pulls to the highs of the range, 138-ish. It tests that 200-day moving average once again. But this looks like a pretty full rejection of that rally sprint now that we've backed it all out. So, of course, we would need to see follow through lower. What does follow through lower look like in terms of coincident indicators supporting that? It looks like energy prices at least sidelined, if not lower. It looks like lower U.S. rates, because we are heading into some kind of situation in the U.S. Those would be the drivers, but technically it is a significant reversal. And if you look at across yen crosses, many of the commodity crosses, commodity currencies also reversing lower versus the yen. And the last shoes to drop so far have not done so would be something like euro yen and sterling yen. So we'll be watching those post ECB today if the ECB isn't able to drum up enough hawkishness to support the rate curve expectations, and if European rates soften a bit out the curve as well. So that's the main reaction. And then in your space, we just saw some wild action in gold. Big sprint higher last night, of course, makes sense with these U.S. yields at the front end of the curve coming in so sharply lower. And then there's yet another regional bank goes not belly up, but it's talking about selling itself. There's just a lot of tension around this issue, and it is a very touchy issue on the big long-term charts, because we're getting close to these all-time highs in spot gold versus the dollar.
There is indeed, John, and it's based on what you just said, it's almost difficult to find any negative impulse to gold right now. I think apart from what we're showing here in slide six, we've been showing that on a regular basis, just simply how much the market has been priced in terms of future rate cuts. 83 base points, the SOFR futures indicating before year end, and then over the next year, almost getting close to 2% rate cuts. That is the concern in the short term. I think that if incoming data continue to be relatively strong, whether these cut expectations can be maintained. But as you mentioned, we got geopolitical risk on the rise once again. We saw that alleged attack on the Kremlin yesterday. We have the banking crisis and so on. So I think at this point, it's not a time where we're seeing investors actually selling out. It's potentially just potential buyers maybe just holding back, looking for whether there's an opportunity to get back down to that close to that 2000 level. But the chart on the candle on the day is not really that visible on this one. It really depends on when you have the cutoff time. But there could be potentially a bit of a shooting star here on the day, so that if that is confirmed, then we could see a little bit of weak action in the day ahead. But generally, stay long, I would say, from a long-term perspective.
Yes, and then somewhat counter to our point from earlier in this podcast, we're talking about if there is going to be a situation, it's not likely to be in real growth, et cetera. It's going to likely to be due to some U.S.-specific banking system situation. But looking at the commodity space, arguably, it's saying the forward economic outlook is not great here. And we're really at critical levels after yesterday's further dump, essentially testing the lows of the cycle and actually testing in the case of WTI.
Yeah, and especially the overnight action where we, on the opening in Asia today, WTI absolutely fell out of bed at one point down 7.2%. Simply algo-driven selling, no liquidity to absorb it. And since then, we've seen quite a decent rebound, and we're up on the day. So I think actually with that in mind, considering the three-day action we've seen here today could be quite crucial in terms of the future direction, because we got really close to those March lows below in WTI and closer close in Brent. So we need to see this, whether this is more than just a very strong amount of technical selling following the recent breakdown, or whether fundamentally these lower prices can be supported. So today could be quite interesting.
Less drama, but similar story in copper, leaning on some really critical levels. The pivot lows from back earlier, well, not really earlier this year, but basically the pivot lows of the year, essentially, except for maybe January's, the start of the January.
Yeah, and it's a bit difficult to tie the dots right now, because the short-term outlook is challenged by the macroeconomic data that we're getting, and the general weakness that's led to this sharply higher in expectation for rate cuts in the U.S. But at the same time, the long-term fundamental support is still one where we continue to be reminded on a regular basis by many of the mining companies delivering the copper that's required for the 2050 carbon targets is simply not possible. So something's going to give eventually, but in the short term, the market is trying to join the macroeconomic weakness that's playing out elsewhere, especially in the oil market. But as you can see, the drop we've seen recently has been relatively benign. So underlying we still see support in this market.
All right. We were looking at the stocks, some of the stock news coming in this morning, Peter, and it was a big surprise. There's been so much hype around this Novo Nordisk drug. Wegovy actually reported sales that were slightly more disappointing, but you have a bit of a different take on that, I think, than what the headline might suggest. So start us off with that one on the stocks to watch today.
Yeah, Novo Nordisk being the second most valuable company here in Europe, so obviously a bellwether of this market. And Q1 revenue and operating income, EBIT, easily beat estimates, so that was sort of cleared. And excess liquidity is driving an increase of the buybacks by 2 billion Danish kroner. So that was all fine and dandy. But Wegovy, which is the big growth driver of the future, sales figures for Q1 actually disappointed. I think the market, expectations were just simply too high for Wegovy, and shares are down 7% right now. And the reason why I said they were too high is that Novo Nordisk had already indicated that demand, and they said that in the press statement this morning, demand for Wegovy is just extremely high, John.
It's outstripping their ability to simply to produce.
Absolutely. Yeah. And they've just finished the final work, as far as I understand it, with a contract manufacturer here in Europe. So they will very soon begin ramping up massively the production here in Europe. And they just said that the launch in the UK is going to according to plan. So that will be set in motion very soon. So I think, it is what it is. We have to remember that, equities and equity pricing, you are pricing a perpetuity. So it makes it difficult. Slight beat or misses against estimates always can make very big changes in the value or the pricing of an equity instrument. And that is what we're seeing this morning, because expectations were simply too high. U.S. regional banks, of course, in focus. PacWest. Shares were down 52% in extended trading after being down, I don't know, was it 20 or 30% in the primary session, and Western Alliance as well down 22%. I think it was Western Alliance that tried to calm the market by saying, hey, we actually saw deposits rising here in April, so maybe things are not that bad. And you wanted to say something, John?
No, I just I wanted you to complete your point there on the banks, but there's an angle on this. One of the reasons there's so much concern potentially is that we can afford, we meaning the U.S. banking system, can afford one or two situations. J.P. Morgan apparently having deep enough pockets to take over First Republic Bank. But if this is, is PacWest the last story, or are there going to be five, six, ten more banks that need to be taken over. JP Morgan can't do it. They can't continue to have the largest bank that already is violating this 10% rule in terms of growing its size by the regulator. And if other banks don't have the depth of pockets or the willingness to take it over, you just have a situation on your hands that has to be addressed in some way. And I think maybe that's part of what spooks it is if you know, JP Morgan can't step up to the plate and others won't. You just have an issue with these banks.
Yeah, and I think that you know we are talking about the long tail of regional banks here at risk, and we've talked about it a couple of times on this podcast. I mean, eventually, so if you talk about in the initial morning call here, or discussion we had in the team, JP Morgan has been sort of the vehicle the U.S. government, the FDIC, has used so far to contain and absorb these failing banks, but they're already now exceeding the limits that we have on, you know, how big a share of the total deposits in the banking system one single bank can have, and JP Morgan is beyond that 10% right now. So that means that the next three banks, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and Bank of America, will have to step up here. And if you look at PacWest and Western Alliance, those two are California and Western U.S. banks. I suspect that means that Wells Fargo, from a geographic and diversification perspective, they don't want to acquire these two banks or absorb them. It doesn't really make sense for them. That means I think we're left with Citigroup or Bank of America. And I just saw Bank of America. They, you know, they should have the balance sheet to absorb something. But it's an interesting thing. We need to follow this because there is now a sequence. And the question, John, is, for now, it has been contained, but when do we get to that magical switch button where it turns from being, you know, a small thing that could be contained to something that is far bigger? And if there aren't any of the larger banks that are willing or can at one point absorb any more banks, then I think, as you said, then you might get a U.S. a government coordinated effort. And I know in the U.S. it's very forbidden, but we have done it multiple times, both in China and in Europe. You create sort of a government vehicle that sort of absorbs these regional banks, and because the U.S. government has almost unlimited funding, so they can take over the assets, and then over time you just, you know, sell these assets in a controlled way in an auction to the banks that feel that they can absorb these assets.
And that's running up against a government that's completely dysfunctional and involved in a debt ceiling and debt limit increase debate that's going absolutely nowhere. So it couldn't come at a worse time, you could argue, from a political movement perspective. And the popular image of, oh, bailing out the banks will not be pretty either. It's really a critical issue. We need to make sure we have both eyes on this bank situation. But I'll let you continue with the German automakers.
Yeah, I wanted to mention the Volkswagen and BMW because those two companies are very important for the German economy that we have had in focus in the past couple of months here on the podcast. You know, being this export-driven economy and, you know, should be benefiting from what's happening in China. That's still lacking a little bit, but the car makers are doing absolutely well. We talked about it, that there's a lot of pent-up demand because that was one of the industries that was you know, mirrored in the bottlenecks in global supply chains. You know, Volkswagen, BMW reporting very strong revenue and operating income. The operating margins are increasing, and there is an increased likelihood, especially for Volkswagen, to see upward provisions for the fiscal year targets. So things are going very well for car makers. And then I should have put it into the stocks to watch. We would try to limit to three, but I should have mentioned ArcelorMittal. So ArcelorMittal is Europe's largest steel maker. They were out saying, you know, pricing conditions very favorable. They beat the estimates. They were saying that steel demand has actually increased over the past couple of months. They were looking very upbeat on the future, and they expect shipments. So this is a real economic activity indicator. They expected volume and shipments of steel to increase 5% in the global economy this year compared to 2022. So I would say that's pretty good news for from a macro perspective. And then as we look ahead, the earnings to watch today, Apple, Booking, Fortinet are the three companies that we have in focus in the U.S. They're all three reporting after the U.S. market closed, so they won't be impacting the primary session. That will be considerations about policy, regional banks that we already mentioned. So, and we've highlighted Apple's quarterly financials here. We're on slide 10 in today's slide deck. Revenue growth is expected to be down 5%. A $2 billion decline in their operating income over the past year, so that equates to around 6-7% decline. So there's a little bit of margin compression there for Apple. But otherwise, this is a bellwether, and you can see the analyst estimates are already expected to go back into growth by the current quarter we're in and then the following quarter. So, but very, very curious to hear what Apple is saying about the economy. And then from a macro perspective, I think Booking is interesting. Booking is one of the largest booking sites in the world for hotels and restaurants, etc. Expected to see revenue growing almost 40% compared to a year ago, doubling their operating income. Of course, there's some pent-up demand in the comparables on the year-to-year basis because of the lockdowns, but we've got all these indicators on consumers and also for MasterCard that things are actually going quite well on cross-border payments and restaurant bookings. And then Fortinet, we have to highlight that, one of the largest companies in the cybersecurity industry. This company is expected to grow revenue 26% compared to a year ago. I can't imagine a better industry to be in right now than the cybersecurity because of the war in Ukraine and with the constant security threats from Russia. It just drums up demand incredibly from both the government side, but especially also from the private sector.
All right. And it's still an interesting day on the macro calendar as well, with Norges Bank out this morning, just a few minutes from when we're speaking here, likely with a 25 basis point move. But are they going to say anything about concerns on the currency and therefore guide hawkish to avoid continue to run away to the downside? We're testing close to 12 in Euronoc, if you can believe it. ECB expected to deliver 25, marginal at the margin, expectations for a 50 among some analysts, but I think 25 is definitely more likely. I don't think there's a lot of drama around the guidance that they want to continue to signal there will be further tightening. Another couple of hikes is priced in beyond today's, almost another couple of hikes is priced in beyond today's hike. And they don't need to really guide much on QT other than to say things are proceeding okay, because they're not. It's not up for a review until June. And as well, there is a big Teltro roll-off in June of some 500 billion euros. So maybe some interest around the guidance around that, but ECB very much on the rails, and I don't think a lot of drama. What's in the drama is whether the market takes the chance to take euro dollar up through the range highs and into the 111s for the first time in quite some time, or whether we are peaking out here. Otherwise, trade balance data out of the U.S., but the weak claims will get a lot of focus if these are a big surprise. And then after that crazy ADP print yesterday, we'll be looking forward to tomorrow's non-farm payrolls, obviously, unemployment rate, et cetera. And by the way, the podcast will not be returning tomorrow, at least not for a regular daily call. If we couple together some kind of special edition today, that may be another thing. But it is a holiday here in Denmark tomorrow, so we will be offline. So in that case, have a great day out there. Have a great weekend when you get there. And we'll be back next week with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.